put that verse right at the top of page 1. And you can see Matthew, Mark, and Luke all add a little bit to it. So then the Pharisees were filled with rage, went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians how they might destroy him. So what are they looking for now in his teaching? Truth? No, they're looking for a weapon. Is Jesus going to give them a weapon?
Yeah, I don't think you might say.
You're right, it's not. All right.
So he's not going to give them that weapon. So the parables are a judgment against the Pharisees, but not simply against the Pharisees, against everybody who has not yet committed to believing in him. Early on, you remember when Nicodemus came by night? What did he say about Jesus? We know you're what? You're a teacher come from God, because no one can do the signs that you're doing. Now, he wasn't the only one. How quickly did the apostles make that same decision that he's the Christ? You remember when Simon went to Peter and told him that they'd found the Messiah based on just a few miracles? You remember Nathanael, just because Jesus could tell him something that happened under a fig tree, he was ready to confess. So there's two groups of people who are working within the middle or in the midst of the Jews. And his time has not yet come. Matter of fact, let's go ahead and turn to the last page, which actually second to the last page, which has a little bit of a chart here that I wanted you to look at just real quickly. There's two of them. I want to look at this one first, then we'll turn the paper over and look at the other one. So we see, and again, this is all, I don't know what word, I guess guesswork would be the word I would want to use. God doesn't seem to care much about chronology like we do. We like to know when things happened and how they happened and what happened next, and we like to put things in a nice little box. But if you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you can't do that, because they're constantly, especially Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're constantly putting things in out of order. Now, out of order by our standards, are they out of order by their standards? Well, clearly not. The Lord doesn't keep things in chronological order, because what's time mean to the Lord? A day is like a thousand years, a thousand years like a day. But this is important, so I wanted to take a little bit of time, and here's basically how they have determined. There are three or four Passovers. You can see that at the very bottom, where you have the first Passover under that big black dark line that says Jesus the Messiah. You have a first Passover in John 2. You have a second Passover in John 5. You have maybe a third Passover in John 6. And then final Passover, which is the one he was put to death. And so that's the fourth Passover. So if you add that up, you have a little over 3 years, three and a half years. And during that period, as he puts it, and I think that's probably a pretty fair way of putting it, he starts out in obscurity, he moves to popularity, and of course by the time it's time to crucify him, where is he?
Opposition.
There's a lot of opposition. And it doesn't take much for the Pharisees to stir up the crowd. Even though Pilate could see that it was the Pharisees who had the problem, did the Pharisees have much difficulty stirring up the crowd? Why would they ask for Barabbas and ask for Jesus to be crucified? I mean, what kind of... I can't even comprehend that. But I think it had to do, once again, with his teaching. They didn't like his teaching. Did they like the miracles? When he fed the 5,000, what were they ready to do? Make him a king by force. When he didn't teach what they wanted to hear, what did they do? They walked with him no more. None of those people ever walked with him again. And Laura's right. Ultimately, it led to him wanting now to put him to death. Let's go ahead and turn to the second page. And he doesn't put the Passovers in here, but I wanted you to see that that's basically how they coordinate this. But I just wanted you to see that the kingdom parables, you see there's the public ministry of John the Baptist under that little line, that chart with fall, winter, spring, summer. So you have the public ministry under the ministry of Galilee, right under the word, or right above the word ministry, you see the kingdom parables. And this is almost exactly halfway through his ministry. A year and a half to 2 years have gone by. A year and a half to 2 years are to follow. So we're right in the middle of his ministry when he starts making this huge change in the way that he's teaching. And so what led to it, we talked about last week, there was an animosity, a frustration with the Pharisees. They're filled with rage when, excuse me, when he performs miracles now, what do they say? Okay, they're from Satan. And then they say, why don't you show us a real miracle from heaven? What about all these miracles we're seeing? They don't count for anything, according to the Pharisees. These are nothing. We can't believe you based on these. We need an actual sign from heaven. What does Jesus say? It's only going to be one, and it's the resurrection. So let's go ahead and go back then to page one. I just wanted to put these up here so you could see that the chronology of Christ's life is, I think, very important to understand where we're at in his ministry. And so the believers are going to get one thing. The unbelievers are going to get something else. There's a definite judgment here. And so the question is asked, why are you teaching in parables? The answer, I've broken it into two sections there at the very middle of page one. For the believers, God had foreordained that they would be allowed to know the mysteries of the kingdom. And so Jesus' answer there on page one, right in the middle, because it has been given you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. But what about the others? But to them, those who are outside, it has not been given. Based on what? See, this is critical. This is not something that God decided. Who made this decision?
People decided not to believe.
All right, they decided it. Exactly. God gave them prophecy, miracles, and the method by which Jesus was teaching the truth. Did the law confirm everything Jesus was teaching? Yeah, he made it very clear that everything he was teaching was out of the law. And he used the law, just like Isaiah, just like Jeremiah, just like Moses. But what did the people think about that law? Why did God swear in his wrath that they would never enter his rest? Because they didn't believe. They wouldn't keep his law. They promised that they would. And then while Moses was up on the mountain for 40 days, what'd they decide? We need a God. We don't have a God. We need a God. Well, they'd already committed themselves to God, but they rejected him. So it's given to you to know the mysteries because you are prepared, but it has not been given to them. So it wasn't God who took that knowledge away. They wouldn't listen. And the same thing is true today. Does God judge us based on how we accept his word? And nothing's changed. To him who has, more will be given. To him who doesn't have, even what he has is taken away. It's astounding to me sometimes when I get a chance to talk to people who have fallen away. They were once very knowledgeable in the scriptures. You get to talk to them 10 or 15 years later. What do you find? They've lost it all. They don't have any spirituality about them at all anymore. And it's incredible. But again, I don't think this is a judgment that God specifically gave. I think it's just the natural response or the natural consequence of what they were doing. So the problem, I think, is given in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And that's where the parables are going to come in. Where's the wise? This is the bottom of page one. Where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. Now, that's exactly what Jesus is going to do. The people have rejected him. He needs a year and a half or 2 years to finish up his work. He's not ready. His time has not yet come. His disciples are not yet prepared. The work that he needs to do, the prophecies that need to be fulfilled, it's not time to exacerbate this conflict. It's time to lower the conflict by teaching things they don't know what he's talking about. If you get up and you preach a whole sermon and it doesn't make any sense to everybody, what is there to punish him for? What is there to use to get him for? Well, there's nothing. And as a matter of fact, after that, people are going to say, why do you hear him? He's not even making any sense anymore. He's talking about a sower. He's talking about tares. He's talking about all sorts of different things that have no bearing and have no controversy. And yet, in the middle of all those parables, what's he giving to the faithful? He's giving tremendous knowledge, tremendous information. All right, let's go ahead and turn to the second page. To you, it has been given to know the mysteries of the kingdom. To them, it has not been given. We've talked about this word before, but just wanted to kind of reacquaint ourselves with it. The term mystery in the Greek, just like in English, if you're reading a mystery novel, how long does it stay a mystery? Till you finish. After that, is it a mystery anymore? Will you read it again? Oh, this will be so exciting to read again. No, why won't it be exciting to read again? Yeah, I mean, you already know. There's no mystery at all anymore. You already know the answer. Now, most of the things that Jesus is talking about here follow that same line. God kept them hidden. God kept them secret, so they were a mystery. But once they're revealed, are they a mystery anymore? See, the idea in Matthew, the parable of the sower, that there are four kinds of hearts, and that those hearts can either be hard, they can be thorny, they can be rocky, or they can be good soil. Does that give us some insight into how people respond to the message we're preaching to them? It's a tremendous mystery. I mean, it's incredible that we would never have known that, but now that we do, is it a complicated? Is a parable of the sower complicated? No, not at all. But it's revealing things about people that we wouldn't know. And it reveals why people respond to the gospel differently. Is it because we just didn't get it out right? Is that why they responded like that? No. Is it a crummy preacher that leads people to fall away or makes rocky soil or hard soil or thorny soil?
It's the individual heart.
It's the individual heart. And the power of God's word is the same for everyone. But it's just like the seed. Does the seed lose its power when you put it into rocky soil? No, it doesn't lose its power. What's the problem? It's the soil. It's the soil. And so the mystery of the tares, the same thing with the tares. The tares is a fascinating story about somebody throwing seed, and that's all the multitude gets. Well, what does Jesus tell? Who's the seed sower? Jesus. Who's the man who sowed the tares? The devil. Now, is that a mystery? Do we know that? We could never know that. And the field is the world, not the church, but the world, because it's in the world that a lot of the things that we think are dealing with disciples, for example, in Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 to 23, not everyone who calls me Lord, Lord, but only those who do the will of my Father in heaven. Now, is that the church or the world? It's not the church, is it? Because who's the church? What's the church made up of? Only the saved. And only the faithful. So where do we put these people? Well, they're in the world. So all the denominations, all of the false religions, where are they? They're in the world. That's the field. That's the devil sowing his seed in the midst of the wheat. And as we look at that, it's a fascinating, once again, a fascinating insight that helps us understand all of the things that are going around us today. But if you don't understand the parables, then what does it give you? See, it gave them nothing. They heard a story about a sower. They heard a story about somebody sowing tares. They heard a story about somebody finding a treasure, finding a pearl of great price, a dragnet. And what did they leave saying? Boy, we don't get this. There's nothing to get here. But when the faithful come and they ask him, what does this mean? What does he give them? He gives them tremendous wisdom, tremendous insight. So these are mysteries only because God didn't decide to, excuse me, to reveal. Now it's interesting, and again, I'm not going to read this, but if you look at the very middle of page 2, you get a really interesting overview of this word mystery. Because the term mystery in the first century, to the Romans and to the Greeks, had a very important meaning, a philosophical meaning. And what it meant was, we know things you don't know. And our philosophers have given us insights into things that no one else has except those who study them. And as a result of that, we are superior. Now, when Paul got to Corinth, that was the problem there. And that's why he uses this term to describe the fact that who really has all the mysteries? The Christians. The gospel has all the mysteries. There's no mysteries in Plato. There's no mysteries in Aristotle or Socrates. Now, unfortunately, the mysteries that were by Plato and Aristotle and Socrates were taken by the church fathers like Irenaeus and Augustine and some of these other people, and they mixed them in. So the mystery that Plato came up with, which is called Neoplatonism, which teaches that matter is evil and we are all born evil. Now, how did that get into the church? See, that's Calvin's total depravity. Where'd that come from? Not from the scriptures. Where'd it come from? It came from the mysteries of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and most of the Gnostic doctrines that we're dealing with today, like there's no hell. And that everybody's born in sin, and a lot of other things that we look at, they come from that. And so what Paul wants us to understand, where are all the mysteries? Only in the scriptures. If they're not in the scriptures, they're not worth a nickel. And so all the respect that, again, I use the word church fathers because that's what they're called. All the people, all the preachers who lived after the apostles died and wrote. I think I showed you the volumes are this much. The volumes that, but most of these people were converted out of this Gnostic or human philosophy, and they incorporated that in their teachings. So the reason that the Lord used this term is to help people understand that all true mysteries are in the scriptures. Because who's the only one who knows where we came from, where we're going, why we're here, where we're going, what the purpose is? God. And where's he give it to us? In the scriptures. So when I'm looking for knowledge, I'm just going to go to the scriptures. I have a healthy skepticism of anything that man writes. Is that a good idea, to have a healthy skepticism about anything that's written by men? Sure. So commentaries and all these other things, you know, you look at them and they're helpful sometimes, but I've got a healthy skepticism. I think I told you years ago, when I find something new I've never thought of before in one of these commentaries, before I'm going to use it, what do I have to do? I got to find it in the scriptures. And usually I like it if somebody in the Lord's church at some point in the past came to the same conclusion. If I'm the first guy to ever figure this out, what do I have to think? There's probably something wrong with this doctrine, because we need verification. It's got to come from the scriptures. And so oftentimes it's that little tiny step out of the scriptures where we're trying to explain something that can't be explained, because God didn't give us enough information. So this is what the parables are. And that's where the problem is, because a lot of people read the parables and they find a lot more in the parables than's actually there.
Oh yes.
Yeah, because the parables cover a lot of things. And usually it's just one thing the Lord is trying to get out of it. And so it's interesting. I've done a lot of reading. The parable of the man that goes out in the morning and finds people to work, and then he goes out in the middle of the day and he goes out at the end of the day. You'd be amazed at how many different ways that's interpreted. And yet, to me, it's a very simple process. But once again, if Jesus didn't give the explanation, then what do we have to do with the parables? We got to find it somewhere else in the scriptures. Because if you have symbolic language teaching something you can't find anywhere else in the scriptures, then what's that telling you? Because that's what the JWs do. That's what the Mormons do. They find a scripture that they take a little twist on, but you can't find it anywhere else in the scriptures. So what do you have to say? It's false. It's got to be from the truth. All the mysteries are in the scriptures. Now, one of the things that's interesting, and I won't take the time because we just went over this in Romans, I think, chapter 11. So it's just been a few months ago that we went through this. But if you notice, I capitalized all the words for mystery on page 2. And almost every one of them, if you see the underlined portion that's bolded, it's kept silence since the world began, from times eternal. The mystery which in other generations was not made known. So the Lord is the one that God gave the right to reveal these things. And did he bring life and immortality to light through the gospel? Do we know things about life and immortality that they didn't know in the Old Testament? Yeah, we know a lot about it. Do we know a lot more about the judgment day than they knew in the Old Testament? Yes, we do. Do we know a lot about the Old Testament that they didn't understand because they were seeking and searching diligently, but who were they prophesying for? They were prophesying for us. So, let's go ahead and turn to the third page. Many prophets and righteous men wanted to see what you see, but they didn't see them, because I'm revealing to them now. I'm revealing them to you now in parables. So there is a sense of entitlement here. There's a sense of what's the word I want? There's a sense of we have something no one else has. We have information no one else has. And does it give you esteem? Does it give you a sense of importance that you can see these things? I mean, the whole world is looking down on us and saying, you people are so narrow-minded, you're so literal-minded, you make the scriptures always exactly the way that they say. And what are we thinking? That's what we should be doing. That's exactly right. And we're going to see things no one else is going to be able to see. And so he says now, let's go to the middle of page 3. I speak to them in parables because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear. So therefore I speak to them because. All right, is because pointing forward or backward?
Backward.
So it's because of everything that's happened up to this point that I'm teaching this. But look at Mark, right in the middle of page 3. So that seeing they may see and not perceive. So in the previous verse, in Matthew 13:13, it's because they don't see. And what is it in Mark 4? In order that they might not see. So the parables perform two functions. First of all, they are given because these people should be able to see but can't see, and so now they won't be able to see, and that's what the parables are supposed to do. So God has made a decision here that there will be an entire section of revelation in the parables, and a lot of times you won't find it anywhere else. You can't really find the teachings of the parable of the tares or the parable of the sower an exact way that it's put together in the parables anywhere else in the scriptures. Now, once you have that key, can you find them in the scriptures? Can you find the hard heart in the scriptures? Well, yeah, you can. Can you find the rocky, the thorny, the good and honest heart? You can find them, but it's never put together quite like that. And the same thing with the parable of the tares, that all of these denominations have arisen as a result of the devil planting what? tares in the midst of the wheat. And can you tell the difference a lot of times? I mean, even with a microscope, can you tell the exact difference sometimes between the tares and the wheat? See, sometimes you can until the fruits start coming out. And I'm talking about churches of Christ that are starting to wobble. And you're looking at them and you're going, is it or isn't it? Isn't it or isn't it? And then pretty soon, what happens? That's a tare. I can see it now. Or you say, I still can't see it. Maybe they're okay. I don't know. I can't tell. Did you go through this? Have we gone through this? Did they go through this in the 50s? Have we gone through this ever since with different doctrines that have come and gone? The devil has taken the ability to keep the church almost identical to what it's supposed to be like, except for how many little things you have to put in there before it becomes a tear? Oh, about 1/16 of a thousandth of a millionth of an inch. I mean, it doesn't take much. Virgil?
It always concerns me when conversations like we're having right now come up among brethren. And the term is used sometimes, well, either he or there are only off on that one thing. It don't take 10 things to take and cause digression. One thing will do it.
Right.
And that's it. And we have to take and sharpen our senses to that. Because if we become wishy-washy and if we become soft and we become accepting something that is not right, then it could be 10 things. It's still not right.
Yeah. That's right. And who but God can say they're only off on one thing?
Yeah.
See, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I can't be involved in this thing at all because we don't have what kind of fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness?
No
fellowship. So when in doubt, have mercy, try to help them, but be careful. And, you know, it's interesting. If you ever get lost out in the wilderness and you're looking at berries to eat, are they all safe to eat?
No.
Matter of fact, we were talking to a guy who was in the military, and he was telling us that if you find a white berry, what should you do? Don't eat it. 99 times. Now, a gooseberry is white. But I don't think we have gooseberries in America, or at least if we do, they're not in our climate. But anything else, so if I'm out in the wilderness and I'm seeing a plant I don't recognize, what am I going to do? Am I going to eat it? Man, I'm hungry. No. And same thing with mushrooms. Can you tell them all apart? Every year in Oroville, when I was an ambulance driver there, we'd go out and somebody had eaten a bunch of mushrooms and their liver was destroyed. And if they couldn't get a liver transplant, they were going to die because they couldn't tell the difference. And I decided at that point, I'm never going to do that. I'll buy them in the store because my liver is too important to me. But Virgil's point is well taken. If you can't identify with complete assurance, what should you do? Just keep holding your judgment. Just keep watching. Because did Jesus talk about a church in, where was it, Philadelphia or Laodicea, somewhere where he said, there are a few who will walk me in white. There were a few there. And you're thinking, well, what were they doing there? Well, in the first century, if you had a church and the nearest church was 10 miles away, how were you going to get there? Well, if you have time to walk, but if you're a slave, you got time to walk 10 miles and come back. So there are situations where you're going to be forced, but you're not going to be among them. You're going to have to say, I'm not going to have any part of this. And that's a tough one. Personally, because we have cars, are we in that kind of situation? We're pretty fortunate. We don't have to worry about things like that. But it's not something that anyone can take for granted. Because as churches get smaller and smaller further and further apart, should we all meet in our homes if we can't find a church? And that's a hard decision. For the most part, I would say yes. But Jesus talks about a church that has some things that you're looking at and you're going, how in the world could there be people in that church that are going to walk with him in white? And so I just throw that one in there to say we need to be really careful that when we're passing judgment on things. All right. So what we see in these parables is mysteries revealed. And yes, we have to be careful about them, but when we can be assured, then, as Jesus said, whoever has, more will be given. But whoever does not have, what he has will be taken away from him. So there's two purposes for parables. To give to the righteous information they could never have, which many righteous men were wanting to see. But for these other people, they're a judgment. And then he explains the judgment to us. And before we get to that section, I want to talk a little bit about the prophecy that he gives. Toward the bottom of page 3, we have, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Anybody remember that? And what does Isaiah say?
Here am I.
Here am I, send me. And then verse 9, go and tell these people, keep on hearing, but don't understand. Keep on seeing, but don't perceive. Make the heart of this people dull and their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and return and be healed. Now, Isaiah's question and God's answer are very important. So, the prophets, think about this. When the rich man said, if you could send someone back from the dead, my brothers would believe. What was Abraham's answer?
You're like, doesn't play the prophets and Moses, they're not going to believe somebody is sent from the dead.
Okay, exactly. They have Moses and the prophets. Now, before Isaiah was sent, what did the people have? Didn't they have Moses and the prophets?
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're not going to follow Moses and the prophets, what is Isaiah going to be able to do?
Nothing.
Nothing. So, and isn't that what happened with all the prophets? Didn't Jesus say something like this? Which of the prophets did your fathers not... Oh, that was Stephen, I'm sorry. Which of the prophets did your fathers not persecute and kill? Ray, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, the last... When you look at this Isaiah 6, I think the last verse 8, it actually says they shut their eyes. Lest they see with their eyes means... Their eyes are shut unless they decide to open their eyes and see the truth. Otherwise, they're purposely saying, no, I'm not going to listen to you. My eyes are shut. But unless they want to open their eyes and see their mind.
No, that's right.
It says right there, but that's up to you. Otherwise, shut your eyes. Go ahead.
Well, and this is what we would call sarcasm or irony. Keep on seeing and not see. Is that really what God wants?
No,
he wants them to see. But he wants them to understand something. If you're not going to see Moses and the prophets, what can my later prophets do for you?
Nothing.
They can't help you. It's the same thing today. If God has spoken through whom in these last days? Through Jesus and through his apostles. Now, if they won't hear Jesus and the apostles, where do we start? There's nowhere. I can't do anything for those people. If they're not going to believe Moses and the prophets, now I can reprove, I can rebuke, I can exhort, but if they won't hear the words of God, what are we going to be able to do? The answer is nothing. And that's what Isaiah is supposed to go out and tell them. Just keep on not hearing the prophets. Keep on not hearing Moses. Keep on not doing this. Because you've closed your eyes, you've closed your ears, you've closed your heart. And so now the reason Jesus quotes this is what are the Pharisees doing? Exactly the same thing. Jesus wasn't teaching anything that wasn't in the law. Paul said the same thing. When I preach, I don't teach anything different from what is in the law and the prophets, because there isn't anything different. What God taught in the prophets, what did Moses say? If we keep this law, what will it be? Righteousness. Righteousness is in that law. So there's not going to be anything that we can teach that is going to convince people if the gospel won't help them. Just like in the days of Christ, there wouldn't be anything that could be taught that if they wouldn't believe Moses and the prophets, then what was going to happen with Jesus? They weren't going to believe. And then the second part of this prophecy, which I think is important, is found at the bottom of page 3, and that is, Lord, how long? And what's God's answer? So, yeah, so how much good is Isaiah going to do? See, you're going to preach until there's nothing left. Now, I'm not saying Isaiah didn't do some good, because he did with the faithful. Same thing with Jesus. When Jesus was finished with his preaching, what happened in AD 70 to the Jewish nation? The same thing that happened to Isaiah. And this division, and Jesus was very clear in Matthew chapter 7, that many go in by the broad gate, which is the tares. Who goes into the narrow gate, which is the wheat? Just a few. The remnant, he said in Romans chapters 9 and 10. The remnant, that small group of people who truly love the Lord and truly want to do what the Lord wants them to do. All right, let's go ahead and turn to the last page. So here's Jesus' application. In them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says. Now, wait a minute. When God gave that prophecy, he was talking to Isaiah and to the people in Isaiah's day, right? I mean, that if you read Isaiah chapter 6, would you say this is a messianic prophecy? So you wouldn't say that. And that's not what Jesus is saying. What Jesus is saying is the exact same reason God sent Isaiah is why God sent me. And the exact same things that God told Isaiah, I'm telling you. And so everything that Isaiah said is going to be fulfilled today. Hearing, you will hear, you won't understand. And seeing, you will see and not perceive. You remember Luke chapter, what is it, chapter, I think it's 13, 12 or 13. The publicans justified God in the matter of John the Baptist by what? Being baptized by him. But the Pharisees rejected the counsel of God because they did what? They wouldn't be baptized. So even before Jesus started, had this judgment, had this diversity already started? We're not going to believe. You remember when Jesus said, the baptism of John, is it from heaven or men? And they're wrestling back and forth if we say, because what did they believe it? Did they believe it was from heaven? No, they thought it was from men. But they wouldn't commit, because what did all the multitude think?
John was a prophet.
They thought it was John. Yeah, exactly. John was a prophet. So Jesus is dealing with a bunch of scoundrels. And these scoundrels are filled with rage, and they're just looking for a reason to do what they ultimately did. Did they have a good charge when they finally tried to put Jesus to death? No, they couldn't even get two witnesses to agree. They finally asked him, are you the Christ? And that became what? His answer became their charge. But when they went to Pilate, did they give that charge? See, they had to try to come up with something else. And Pilate could see right through it. So these men kept looking. But the parables were given as a judgment. From now on, you're not going to be able to learn anything. Because unless you go back to the beginning and become a disciple, you're never going to be able to understand these things. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. And then next week we'll pick up with the parable of the sower. We're just going to start working our way through these parables. And again, as I said, we're going to learn mysteries hidden from the foundation of the world. For most of you here, you already know them, but it's never too late to reestablish them and maybe see a little bit more than we saw before. So let's go ahead and stop there, and then we'll pick up next week with Parable of the Sower. Thanks, everybody.